Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in.
Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. This is Julie here with you today, and I am joined by Diana, and I can't wait to hear her incredible VBAC story. She's had a C-section and 2 VBACs. But before we get into all of that, I am going to read a review of the week. And this review is from Trista, and it is actually a review for our VBAC prep course. And Trista said, I learned so much at this training. I love being able to go through and highlight and bookmark important topics to discuss with my clients. Thank you, VBAC Link. You ladies are amazing. And this is actually from one of the doulas that took our VBAC doula certification. So if you are a birth worker and want to know more about VBACs and all the information and statistics and facts and nuance and everything that goes along with it, you will definitely want to check out our VBAC doula training. We are going to link to it in the show notes for you to take a look. At the end of the training, you do get a certified, you do become a VBAC certified doula. So take a look at that. There you get CEUs if you need those to maintain your doula certification and all those other things. It's a really amazing course. And we have hundreds and hundreds of doulas all over the world learning how to better support VBAC and all that goes along with that. You guys, I'm fresh off of birth. I was at a birth until about 4:30 this morning, and I overslept through my first podcast session of the day, but we are here and I am feeling more awake and more alert. And my husband just brought me some peanut butter toast because he knows that you need to feed Julie breakfast if you want her to be happy, Julie, for the day. So here we are, and I'm going to snack on my toast while we listen to the story.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, we have Diana here with us, and Diana has some really cool stories with lots of different things. I'm just going to sit and wait and listen to her stories and see what sticks out to me as she elaborates more on all of these cool things that she went through during her journey and see what we're going to talk about at the end of it. Diana is a registered dietitian and diabetes educator. She works from home and freelances, and she's a stay-at-home mom to 3 girls, ages 1 through 6. Her interests include running. Ooh, she just ran her first marathon in September. And riding horses. I also grew up riding horses and training horses. So fun. But she hasn't been riding since she retired her horse a couple of years ago. So I'm excited to hear more about Diana and her birth story. So Diana, do you want to go ahead and take it away and let us know all about your birth journeys?
Yes, thank you so much. It feels surreal, as I think is the case for a lot of people who finally get to share their stories, because I listen to the VBAC link, I mean, almost daily during my second and third pregnancies. And I always thought, you know, one day it would be so amazing if I could share my story. And so it's like a dream come true. And I'm so excited and a little nervous. So yeah, I'm happy to go into the stories of my three births. My first pregnancy, it was my pregnancies are all very, very easy. I joke that pregnancy is no big deal. It's my births and my postpartum periods that are trickier. And I've kind of been dealt some unlucky cards in my with my postpartum recovery. So with my first pregnancy, I just, you know, sailed through it and planned on a hospital unmedicated birth. I just figured, you know, I feel great. My pregnancy has been so healthy. And my older sister had had two unmedicated births in the hospital. My mom had all three of us kids unmedicated. So I just thought, you know, that's what's going to happen. So I ended up going in. I went into labor. It was 41 weeks and one day. And I woke up with very, very light but consistent contractions. And so I stayed home from work. I was working full time back then. And I kind of had those, they became more intense throughout the day. And towards the evening, we decided to call my parents. They were going to come over. They live 2.5 hours away so they could watch our dog, because that's all we had back then was our dog. And so they showed up and we went into the hospital. And hindsight is always 2020. So looking back, I went in, I think, too early. They went ahead and checked me. And I felt like, you know, these are painful. I feel like this is, you know, the real deal. So I went in and they checked me and I was 0 centimeters. But they went ahead and admitted me because my daughter, it was the only baby we found out the gender, so we knew it was a girl. My daughter was having some non-reassuring, her heart tones, it wasn't like an emergency, but they're like, you know, we don't love the way your heart sounds. These heart tones are, we don't want you to go home. We're going to keep you. And I was seeing midwives because I wanted a natural birth and I figured midwives were more aligned with what I wanted for my birth. And so I was in a lot of pain. Come to find out later that my baby was posterior and my midwife didn't even, you know, mention like the positioning could be an issue or why I was in as much pain as I was for not being dilated at all. So I didn't know back then, like how much your positioning can impact your baby and how your baby's positioning can impact the pain you're in and how much you're progressing. So the interventions began and I got an epidural at 0 centimeters and I just could not move at all. I think sometimes you can move a little bit with an epidural, but I could not. I couldn't even like turn myself in bed to shift position. They put the Foley bulb in. So fast forward, that was all around midnight that I was admitted. And then the next day, I was in, you know, didn't feel anything, felt great because I had my epidural. And then started getting close to being able to push, and or at least that's what it seemed like. And then my midwife said, yep, you're almost fully dilated. And then this OB that I'd never seen before comes in, checks me, and I was not a fan of him. I didn't hear this part, but my husband did. He came in and checked me after my midwife did and said, come here to my midwife, like, come here and come check her. She's not at a 10. And then he said something like, go ahead and try to fit another finger in there because she has the epidural. I did not hear that part, but my husband did. We did not appreciate that OB. And he basically said, like, you know, your cervix is swelling. You're probably not going to have a vaginal birth. Your baby's heart tones aren't, you know, as good. It's not what we want to be hearing. Again, it wasn't like an emergency. It felt like I was kind of given the choice, but it seemed like it was going to end up being a C-section. And at that point, I had been, you know, in labor for a couple of days, and I'm like, okay, let's do the C-section. And it did get a little bit scary. They had put an internal monitor on my daughter, and when they took it off, her heart rate really dropped. And I remember saying, like, is everything okay? And my midwife said, like, no. And she put an oxygen on me. And at that point, I was like, okay, just go in, take my baby. I just want to make sure that she's safe. And she was. She was perfectly healthy. Turns out she had a velamentous cord, which I hadn't even heard about that. It was not mentioned to me. I believe you can detect those through ultrasound, and it never came up. So that was the first I learned about a velamentous cord. So it turns out that was likely what was causing her heart rate. The D cells and the heart tones were likely from the velamentous cord. She was posterior, and the surgeon said that she was like just twisted in a really funny position. And he said something like, oh yeah, like there's no way you could have had her, you know, vaginally, but your next baby, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to have a vaginal birth. So yeah, that was my first birth. Physically, honestly, it wasn't that my recovery was pretty good. I mean, I had a C-section, so it's not great, but like it was better than I expected. I was moving around okay. The biggest issue I actually had was at a week postpartum, I got mastitis. I was chose to exclusively breastfeed. I got mastitis, and I was treated with antibiotics, but it turns out the bacteria that caused my mastitis, they weren't sensitive to that antibiotic. So a couple weeks later, I formed really painful infected abscesses. And honestly, that was more painful to me than the C-section recovery, because I had to
Yeah.
It was, I still can like cringe. I have scars on that breast where the surgeon had to lance them and drain them. And it was so painful. And I had to have packing in there to keep the wounds open enough that they could heal correctly. And they would like fall out in the shower, and my husband had to put them back in. It was horrible. That part, honestly, was very traumatic. And nursing, you know, nursing my baby on top of that. So yeah, that was my first birth. And I knew I wanted at least two babies. And I really, really wanted a VBAC. I wanted my birth to go differently than my first. I learned a lot, as we all do. You know, you know what you know when you know it. So it's like, I can't be hard on myself, because at the time I did what I thought was, I was making the best choices given what I know. So I learned a lot from that first birth, and I decided on a VBAC for my second. I wanted a VBAC, and I went ahead and did a different midwife group. One, just because I didn't have the best experience with the midwives at the other hospital. At my 6-week checkup, my midwife said, yeah, I'm really surprised you opted for the C-section. And I thought, I didn't feel like I opted in for it. I felt like it was an emergency. And that was kind of my first inclination that like maybe it wasn't as much of an emergency as they were making it out to be. It's hard to know with the velamentous cord, you know, maybe it was the best thing, but I just didn't have a great taste. There wasn't a good taste in my mouth from that experience. So I went with a different midwife group. It's a midwife, very, very VBAC supportive. And then her OB that they work together. And this kind of will tie into my birth story for my third baby, but I went to a natural childbirth class, not natural pain relief class. Cause I'm like, okay, I want a VBAC, I want unmedicated. I had the epidural at 0 centimeters. I wasn't feeling very confident with my pain management skills. So I went to a pain relief class with a home birth midwife. This was in January of 2020. So I went to this class, and I remember thinking like, wow, that midwife seems really soothing and calming. And I wasn't planning a home birth. I'd never even thought about it. But I remember thinking like, man, if I was to have a home birth, I would want her to do it. So that'll tie into my third story. So yeah, I went to the pain relief classes. Everything was going hunky-dory until the pandemic. I was due in April of 2020, and we all know what happened in 2020. So my plans, everything kind of, things hit the fan around 38 weeks. Everything was in full force with the pandemic, and the hospital policies were changing. I was seeing on the news stories of women who had to give birth alone because their spouses weren't allowed, or being separated from their babies if they tested positive for COVID. And all of that was just really freaking me out, because pregnancy is, you know, anxiety inducing enough without a pandemic. So I remember I went to my visit, actually, to back up. I kind of started to think about home birth. It's funny because I had hired a breastfeeding counselor for my second baby after my struggles with my first. And she actually had 2 home births after her first hospital birth. And she was very pro home birth. And I remember texting her, and she's like, yeah, I really wish home birth was more of an option for mamas right now. And I remember I texted her and I said, yeah, I wish I felt comfortable with the home birth. And that was like, you know, 37-ish weeks. So then I start looking into home birth. I found a midwife local to me, and she had a website, and she said, I'm coming out of sabbatical. She'd been on the sabbatical from her home birth midwifery. And she said, I'm coming out of sabbatical to help these mamas, you know, during this pandemic. So I thought, this is perfect. I scheduled a Zoom consult with her. She said I would be a great candidate for a home birth. VBAC alone doesn't make you high risk. And I was like, okay, this is great. So that was in the morning. And then the evening, I went to see my regular midwife that I was planning on doing a hospital VBAC with. And she said, things have changed. The hospital policies are changing, and I will not be able to attend your birth. It would be her OB that she worked with. And I had met him a couple weeks prior. It was required that I meet with him at least once in case he did end up delivering me, or, you know, doing a C-section. And my first impression of him was not great. I remember I was talking about things like I wanted to use the tub. And he said, oh, you can't use the tub because you're going to be on a continuous monitor. And I said, well, if baby's heart tones sound okay, I would like to decline continuous monitoring and do intermittent monitoring. And he said, oh, you can't decline that. And I remember thinking, like, is this jail? Like,
seriously, are the policy police going to write you a ticket?
Yeah. Like, are you going to arrest me because I declined continuous monitoring? And I had a lump in my throat when I met him, because I was like, but and he'll tie into my story later too. It all kind of knits together. Interestingly, he would end up being part of my birth. So anyway, she said that this OB was going to be delivering me. And I said, I think I'm leaning towards a home birth. It felt so crazy because no one in my family had done home births. I didn't know anyone. Actually, my sister-in-law did her third baby was a planned free birth at home. And so that was my only taste of like a home birth. And my midwife, she was amazing. She was so supportive. And I remember she couldn't explicitly come out and say like, yes, like I think you should have a home birth, because I'm sure there's liability issues and just, you know, she couldn't tell me. So I said, I remember this part like gives me goosebumps. I said, we're sitting there, you know, both have masks on. It's just her and me. I can't have anyone else in the visit. I said, if you were to meet me out in the street and you didn't know me, what would you tell me? And she looked out the window. She didn't look at me. She looked out the window and she said, I would tell you to go home and have your baby. And it just, it makes me like choke up just thinking about it, because I felt this wave of peace. Like, okay, this is what we're going to do. I know,
I have chills. I
know, me too. And that was, you know, years ago. And I just, thank goodness for her, because she just gave me that little push of encouragement. And I thought, okay, like, that's what we're going to do. So I drove home. I was euphoric. I was like, I'm at peace. This is what I'm meant to do. Like, this is going to be a home birth. So I go home, and my poor husband, I don't think I barely mentioned it to him. And I was like, hey, like, what do you think about having a home birth? And he was so supportive. He was like, okay, like, let's do it. I went home and we called our family to let them know, just our immediate family. We didn't really want to broadcast it because, as you know, unfortunately, there is a bit of a negative, kind of a negative stigma with home birth for some people.
Yeah.
They don't know that under the right circumstances, you know, low risk pregnancy, trained midwives, the home birth can be incredibly safe. You know, looked at the studies, and I know you guys have talked about the studies on your podcast. But anyway, we just wanted to not tell everybody but our immediate family. And we said, you know, our mind is made up. Like, don't try to like talk us out of it, because we're doing this and we would love your support. So then a couple of days later, I had a follow-up Zoom meeting with the midwife that I had secured. here's another twist. I got on the Zoom meeting and she said, things have changed on her end. I was just like, okay, what? Like, I'm 38 weeks pregnant. I ordered the birth kit, the pool, everything that she recommended that I order. And then she changed her plans and was going to go to Portland to deliver babies there. And I would need to find a different midwife.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I hung up. She gave me a couple names and numbers of other home birth midwives. Granted, this is, 38 weeks during a pandemic. Like, it was chaos. So I got off the Zoom meeting with her, cried really hard, and then got on the phone to try to call some other midwives. And so I reached one who was an hour away from us, and I cried because I was just a mess. And she said, like, yeah, I'm happy to take you on. And so I met her only once in person. Our other visits were on FaceTime. And so I met her once, and I ended up going into labor 3 days past 40 weeks. And I was just, my biggest worry was pain management. I'm like, okay, I am going from an epidural at 0 centimeters with my first to a home birth. And so I was just focused on labor. I'm just like, if I can get through labor and progress, because with my first birth, I didn't even get to push at all. And so I actually handled labor, I think, really well. The midwives joked that when they got there, they questioned if I was even in labor, because I was handling it really well. Mm-hmm. I had a birth pool. The tub felt so good. And I didn't want to be checked at all. That was another thing with my first birth. I was checked so many times, so many interventions, and that might've, contributed to my cervix swelling, as I have a million different hands, throughout the day, checking me. My cervix was like, hey, I've had enough. So with my VBAC, I didn't want to be checked hardly at all. And so my midwife, it's all up to me. She said, if you're up for it, I think it'd be good to check you just this once. And she did. And she's like, yep, you are so close to being fully dilated. And I was just like, I was euphoric. I'm like, I was like, I got through transition. I got through all the hard stuff. I progressed, and I was just so happy. I was like, okay, like, check done. Like, we aced that. But I hadn't really thought about the pushing part, because I had never pushed before. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, it's like, once you get to fully dilated, there you go. Like, it's easy from there on out. And so I think that was part of what really, it was challenging pushing. I did not handle pushing as well. I thought, like, okay, I'm fully dilated. My baby should be here. Why is this taking so long? And I was in the tub. I was on the bed, just trying to get in the right position. She just wasn't, we didn't know it was a girl, but baby just wasn't, it took a while. I was pushing for about 2 hours. And in those moments, I remember, I didn't handle pushing as well, as gracefully as I did the other earlier parts of labor. Cause at one point I said, am I going to die? Like, I was just panicking. Like, I'm like, this baby is right here and she just won't come out. And so, yeah, pushing, I started to panic, kind of got scared. Like, I wasn't planning on pushing taking so long. And so I ended up being, I don't know how I did, it was like acrobatics. I ended up squatting with my feet on the rim of the toilet. I don't know how I did this. I was, 40 plus weeks and like balancing on the toilet with my like arms on my hands on the tank. So I'm like balancing literally like on the toilet rim with my feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know how I stayed up there and didn't fall, but things moved along, but in hindsight, that position was not good for minimizing tearing. I got, again, hindsight, everything is 2020 after the fact, but that position was already kind of putting a lot of pressure kind of down there, and plus the fear and the tension I had. So I ended up, I remember I felt her crowning and I said, like, oh, it burns. And my midwife said, if it's burning, that means that, you haven't torn, it's stretching. But I did end up tearing, and then I tore pretty badly. And then my baby just like flew out. She just came out really fast, and she was, yeah, my biggest baby. She was 8 pounds, 11 ounces. And I knew I tore. I was still euphoric. I was just like, I had a baby. I was so euphoric. I had a baby in my bathroom. I did it. I was just so happy.
It's the best feeling ever.
Yes, that post-birth euphoria, all those mm-hmm. hormones and endorphins. So I went in my bed. I laid down in my bed. I got that skin to skin that I didn't get with my first baby. She was happy, healthy. And my midwives, I was sitting there with my placenta in like our largest like mixing bowl. So I had my placenta sitting next to me on my bed, which was, you know, I was like, okay, this is interesting. We've kind of come a long way from my hospital birth. Here I am like at home with my placenta sitting next to me. It was just like, I don't know. It was interesting. And my midwife said, we need to check your tear. And I knew I tore. I could, even with all the hormones, and the endorphins, I felt it. And she looked down and she said, we're going to need to go to the hospital for this. And I was just so bummed out because I didn't want to be in the hospital. You know, I had my baby at home. I wanted to stay with her and not go in, but it was a bad tear. So she called in the OB. This is where the OB comes back into my story. The OB that I was not a fan of was the OB on call at the hospital. And my midwife had a really good relationship with him. She called him and said, I have a home birth transfer just for stitching. And so they were ready for me. It was rough getting downstairs because I was on the second, our home then, I was on the second floor and I had to go down to the first floor to get into the car. So that was really slow going. I was lightheaded. I hurt. So we go to the hospital and then I felt like I had to pee, like, but I couldn't. And my midwife was like, okay, let's put some peppermint oil, a couple drops of peppermint oil in the toilet bowl, nothing. And so it turns out my bladder, I had been drinking a ton of water. And then my midwife kept on asking, are you going to the bathroom? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going. But like, it wasn't much that was coming out and I didn't think much of it. I just thought, okay, I'm peeing and so it's fine. It turns out somehow my bladder was really like swollen, or my urethra, I don't know, something was swollen where I was retaining a lot of urine. And so I don't know if that maybe played into the issues with pushing, because my bladder was just full. Like when I got to the hospital, they had to cath me and he took out over a liter and a half of urine, which is a lot. I mean, that's like
that
close.
That is a lot. Oh my gosh.
And as soon as he cathed me, I was like, my pain went down so much. I was like, oh, I was euphoric. I was like, thank you so much. I feel so much better because I just had this bladder that like, I'm amazed it didn't like rupture because I had this swelling that was not allowing me to go to the bathroom. And so he, you know, cathed me and I felt so much better, but then he had to stitch me up. It was a third degree tear. He graded it as a 3B, which I guess is like really close to a fourth degree tear. And he said, described it as a starburst tear. So I mean, just horribly, I mean, very painful. Just didn't tear in a straight line. It was just like, I don't even know what, I don't want to know what it looked like because I didn't look. It took him an hour and a half to stitch me up. And my opinion of him changed a lot from when I met with him. He was great. He was an amazing, he was very compassionate. I didn't feel like he judged me for like having a home birth or anything. He was just like, no, you're here. We're going to stitch you up. He did an amazing job. I healed up pretty, despite how bad the tear was. I healed pretty well. And I attribute that to his really good work on me with his stitching. I did pass out on the way home. I passed out once. My midwife was with us and I woke up to her shaking my shoulders. So I probably should have gone back to the hospital for IV fluids. But at that point, I'm just like, I want to go back to my house. I don't want to miss my daughter meeting her baby sister for the first time. So we get home, actually pass out again when we are in the garage trying to get me from the car to the bed. But I made it. My daughter was awake and she hadn't seen her baby sister yet. So yeah, that was my second birth. Recovery was honestly harder than my C-section. That tear, I remember thinking like, I am not going to be able to walk or run again or ride horses again. Like I could barely move. And so that recovery honestly was harder, which was a bummer because I'm like, I got my V back, but like, which I was still so over the moon about, but recovery was harder than my C-section. So that, you know, just that was hard.
Yeah. You have this beautiful birth and then have to deal with a really, really hard recovery. It just feels so unfair.
Yeah. I was like, can I catch a break? Like I, you know, I had the like velamentous cord, which is, I guess, pretty rare. I had the abscesses, which are with mastitis, which are rare. And then I get a third degree tear, which those are rare. I'm like, can't I catch a break with my deliveries and my postpartum? So yeah, I did pelvic floor physical therapy. For anyone out there who has a severe tear, it does get better. Even if you feel like you're never going to do what you were doing before. I got back to walking. Then I eventually got into running again. I rode my horse. Like, things get better. It just takes time. And you just have to be really patient with yourself.
Let's talk more on choline for a moment. The RDA is 450 to 550 milligrams while pregnant and nursing. Though research suggests that upwards of 900 milligrams in pregnancy supports optimal perinatal and infant health outcomes, most prenatal vitamins contain 1/10 or less of the RDA. As choline is a bulky nutrient and manufacturers often don't want to increase the number of capsules per serving, choline supports the baby's brain and cognitive development during pregnancy and after birth. Choline can be found through food sources like eggs and liver, which is amazing, but more often than not, it's harder to get the full amount that we need on a daily basis. Needed has created an amazing option for when or if you need to supplement so you can do so with ease and confidence that you're getting the choline needed. Their choline add-on is dosed at 500 milligrams of choline chloride per capsule to help you reach your optimal levels. This is a form that can be used in research for optimal outcomes in mothers and their babies. Find prenatal choline and more information about choline on episode 406 and at thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off your first order with code VBAC.
So I did recover. And then we weren't sure if we were going to have a third baby. I was kind of deep down, I feel like I knew I wanted a third, that I would be sad if we didn't. So a couple years later, we did try for our last baby and planned on a home birth this time. No last minute switching at 38 weeks. It's like, no, we're doing this from the get-go. And that midwife from my second birth that did the class, I had actually reached out to her when that one midwife dropped me. And I was like, I went to your pain relief class and I know you probably aren't able to take me on, but do you have any, like, I reached out to her like in a panic and she's like, I'm so sorry, but like, I already have my schedule full. And then all these moms with the pandemic are reaching out to me. So I'd wanted her and I got her for my third. So I'm like, I got the midwife that I wanted for my first feedback. So I met with her in my first trimester. It was her and her student. Felt just so happy to have, you know, planned it from the get-go. I got to have a relationship with her the whole time, unlike my midwife for the other one, where I met her once in person. Like, it was just a crash course in like mentally preparing for the home birth at that point. So yeah, with my third birth, we planned the home birth from the get-go. My main worry was tearing again. I was just terrified of tearing again because it was so hard physically. So I talked through that a lot with my midwife and her student. I even FaceTimed my friend that I used to ride horses with. She's actually now an occupational therapist and she specializes in pelvic floor therapy. And so I FaceTimed her and she gave me some tips on top of everything else that my midwives and I have talked about. I wanted to do a birth photographer and I remember thinking like, oh, what if, you know, it's an investment. And I remember thinking, oh, what if my birth doesn't go the way I want? What if I end up having to go to the hospital? And I saw this quote and it stuck with me. It said, let your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears. And I love that both for birth and for things like choosing like to have a birth photographer. So I went ahead and I met the birth photographer. I loved her and I decided to have her do pictures and video of my birth. And she ended up being like a really honestly part of my birth team. She's also a doula. I didn't hire her as a doula, but she's actually now, she's going to school to be a midwife, a home birth midwife.
I love everything about what you just said, all of it.
Yeah, yeah, she's amazing. So she was part of our birth team. And so, yeah, I was hoping that, I'm like, this is my third baby. My second labor lasted, it was quite a bit shorter than my first. So I thought, okay, like, if that pattern continues, I would love to just have like a 6-hour labor where I push my baby out, no big deal. I didn't quite get that. I went past my due date again. I was hoping that maybe this one I would, you know, go into labor before 40 weeks, but all my babies like to stay past 40 weeks. Another turn of this birth wasn't without its turn of events. My midwife called me a couple days past 40 weeks and she said, I have this really important family thing that I have to take care of. And I'm in Washington State. And she said, I'm going to fly to California for a couple of days. And she said, the student midwife and then a backup midwife who was a previous student of my midwife would be there in case I went into labor while she was gone. And I was just, are you kidding me? Like, I understood, you know, it was an important family thing. Like, I understood, but it was more like, are you kidding me? Like, why do I have all these last minute changes in my births? Because I'm a planner. I like to know what's going to happen. And I just had all these last minute changes. So it turns out I did go into labor while my midwife was in California. The evening of 5 days past 40 weeks, I started having contractions in the evening. And I thought, like, okay, I think this is it. Like, something's happening. And so I stayed up all night. I couldn't sleep. I was having consistent contractions. And I finally called my parents. They were going to come watch my two little girls while we did the home birth. And I waited till like 5 a.m. I'm like, I have to wait till it's like a reasonably, you know, okay hour. Cause I had told them in the evening that I think it was going to happen. So I texted them at like 5 a.m. I said, this is happening. Can you please come over? They pack up and they get here by like 8:00. And my contractions just like stall. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, I called my parents over. I did a false alarm. Like, I started to just feel discouraged. And so I texted the student midwife and she said, get in the tub. If, you know, if they're real contractions, they'll like fizzle out in the tub. Or if they're real, they will not fizzle out in the tub. So I get in and I'm like, okay, good. They're still there. And so they pick up a little bit more and she ends up coming over in the afternoon. And yeah, turns out it was a little bit of like prodromal labor. I felt like it was more intense than the actual progress. Like, I thought I went through transition at one point because I was nauseous and I'm like, okay, this has got to be close. And I didn't want to be checked very much, if at all. And she said, I called the other midwife who was on her way back from California, like literally at the airport. She had called her and said, I talked to the main midwife and she suggests that we check you. And I said, okay, you can check me just like this one time. I said, but don't tell me what it is. I don't want to know. I was just mentally, I couldn't handle, like, I was already kind of discouraged that it was taking longer than I was hoping for. She checked me and I said, like, it's not a 7, is it? Or you know, something like that. And she's like, no, it's not. But yeah, what I want you to do is let's put the TENS unit on. I want you to go outside, walk around. So I actually have a picture of me out in our backyard, just doing a contraction. My husband is just holding me up. And I'm just like in this deep squat, just, I was not having fun. Like, mentally, I'm like, I was getting discouraged. I was like, I'm going to have to go to the hospital. This is not going to work out the way I want it to. Really discouraged. So it turns out at that time, I was only like 4 centimeters and baby was likely posterior, which is why I wasn't progressing despite the intense contractions. So I come back inside and my midwife has me go on all fours with kind of like my butt up in the air. And I kid you not, I felt my baby I felt like this like thunk. And I think that was her turning, because after that, things went like really fast. I got in the tub again. My midwife ended up, she got off the plane and I had the backup midwife and the student midwife. And then that midwife, my main one, got off the plane, came to my house as I was pushing. So she ended up making it for the birth. And so, yeah, I pushed my baby out in the tub with all three of those midwives and my husband. My parents were upstairs in the guest room. Kids were asleep. And I had a water birth like I always wanted. And I knew I didn't tear. I figured if I did tear, it wasn't as bad as the my first VBAC. And I had a beautiful, beautiful video. Oh, I watched it so many times, and I still watch it and like get teary. The moment where I had her, and everyone's like, "You did it, you did it." And I was just like, "I did it, I had a baby." And I was just crying. And my parents got to come down after several minutes. And I said to my dad, I was like, I had a baby girl, daddy. And like, it was just the best moment and my dream birth. And I ended up getting, after my skin to skin time in the tub, we also didn't know what we were having. I thought it was going to be a boy because I had two girls before and I just kind of had a feeling, but I was wrong. It was another girl. So we have three girls. The last two were surprise genders. And I got out and the student midwife who delivered me checked me and she's like, "Diana, you didn't tear at all." And that was what I was hoping and praying for, was that I wouldn't tear. And so, yeah, I didn't tear at all after my third degree. My second VBAC was not even like a skid mark. She was my smallest baby. She was 7 pounds, 6 ounces, which is, you know, perfectly normal weight, but for me that was my smallest baby. So yeah, that was my second home birth feedback.
That is amazing. I love everything about that story except for your hard recoveries. But tell me, how did you recover with your third?
So much better than with my first feedback. I was feeling like a million bucks. Like when they came to do my, like they do with the home birth, they come to your house to do like the checkups. And yeah. they were like, "Wow, you're just like bopping around." Like I was just feeling great.
Bopping around.
Yeah, physically I felt amazing. So much easier. Yeah. Just night and day difference from my first feedback. I did have a couple months later with my third, I did have a little bit more like mental health struggles. So I had a great physical birth. It was my dream birth. It was like everything I wanted. But then I did struggle a bit more with, which was surprising because I had this dream, you know, my dream home birth without tearing and everything went, you know, perfectly. So I was kind of surprised that I had a little bit more like postpartum anxiety. I've always been an anxious person. I was diagnosed with anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder when I was in third grade. So I've had, you know, a lifelong, I have experience with those things. But I think just postpartum, my third baby, none of my babies were great sleepers, but she especially was not sleeping. And so the insomnia, you know, the lack of sleep really, really contributed to like more of the postpartum anxiety and OCD. Even when she was sleeping, I couldn't sleep. And that's when I knew there was a problem. I'm like, she is sleeping soundly and I cannot fall asleep. So I did struggle with that with her. So that was, yeah, I just wasn't expecting to have those types of struggles because I had this like dream birth, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. I think this is what I want to talk about is the different recoveries that we can experience, right? Because your C-section recovery was great until it wasn't. And then your first VBAC recovery had lots of struggles. And then your third was much easier. And I think it's just really interesting how the birth goes doesn't always correlate to how the recovery goes. And I think that that's something maybe we don't talk about or prepare parents for enough in advance. Like everybody's always just so worried about the baby, right? It's not even about the mom. It's about the baby, the baby, the baby. Is the baby looking good? Is the baby's heart tones okay? Is the baby this, that, the other growing too big, too small? You know, there's very little regard. It feels like sometimes the baby's health is prioritized over the mom, right? We all want a healthy baby. We want a healthy mom. We tack that on at the end too. We also don't talk enough about how hard postpartum can be generally, but also when these extra complications come and get involved. So I wish there's a platform. Okay, there's got to be. There's got to be on Instagram or somewhere. There's got to be somebody that talks about it, right? There just has to be. I haven't looked into it, but what I was going to say, somebody needs to talk about that. I feel like there probably is people talking about it. I don't know anything, any of them right now, but Paige is going to cringe at me when I say this, but I think that what we're going to do is find some resources about postpartum mental health. Like there's Postpartum Support International, I know, PSI, that has great resources all over the world. But I want to find also some social media accounts that just talk about it and just frank, straight up, no messing around. You know, I just very direct talking about it. Do you know of any, Diana? I'm sure you probably maybe do. I don't know. What do you have? Anything?
I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure there are. I'd have to look into it. Honestly, for me, my primary care provider, I actually used to work with him after my first baby. I left my, you know, working full time, but I was working in a clinic and I got to work alongside the doctor who was my primary care. And he is just so supportive. Like I felt like he was just all I needed to talk with. And so I felt really supported by him and then just my family. But yeah, I'm sure that there are resources out there because thankfully I think that mental health is becoming, you know, there used to be like a stigma. You don't talk about medications or therapy. And that is slowly changing for the better, I believe, but it's still not quite where it needs to be. Like if you break your leg, you know, you're going to get a cast. No questions asked. But if you're struggling inside your mind, you think, no, I can just tough it out. You know, you have to think of your mental health just like you would your physical health. And if you need medication, talk to your doctor about medication. If you need therapy, find a therapist. You know, do what you need to do, because unfortunately, there's so much, you're suffering, you can really suffer silently. Like I've had days where like I had a panic attack and just cried on the floor. And then an hour later, I'm at music class with my baby. And like no one would know that I was just, you know, sobbing on the floor before I showed up. Like you can hide it so much easier than you would like a physical, you know, physical.
Well, and I think that that's probably why it's not talked about a lot, is because it is something that you don't see, like a broken leg or, you know, a big giant scar on your forehead. It's something that is not visible and has to be talked about. And because of that, it's easy to feel alone. It's easy to feel isolated and like nobody knows what you're going through. And so it's naturally, I feel like it's going to be naturally more, a secret's probably not the right word, but just private, right? But that kind of adds to the struggle with all of us. So while you were talking, I did do a quick little Instagram search and I found three Instagram accounts that I was just scrolling through, you know, quickly and looking over that seem to be really helpful and really beneficial for postpartum. And they all have quite a few followers, tens of thousands of followers. The first one is, I already said, is Postpartum Support International. It's all spelled out into one long word, Postpartum Support International. The other one is Postpartum Stress. Postpartum Stress, that's the Postpartum Stress Center runs that. They have almost 100,000 followers and their content looks really, really good. And then Postpartum University is another one. They don't have as many followers. They're right now at the time of our recording, they're just under 9,000 followers, but I do love the content that's being shown here as well. So those are going to be linked in the show notes for you. So make sure that you take a look at those and follow those, because I think that postpartum support is not something we know we need until we're in the middle of it. And when we're in the middle of it, it's hard to see outside of that and know where to reach for support just because of how overwhelming everything feels. So do yourself a favor, go follow some of those accounts. And as always, reach out to the VBAC link if you need help or support, not only in postpartum, but any part of your birth after cesarean. We would love to support you and direct you to resources. All right, Diana, I love what you wrote here on your survey. And I'm just going to read it if that's okay with you. So one of the questions that we ask in our like podcast guest release form is, what is a secret lesson or something no one really talks about that you wish you would have known ahead of time when preparing for birth? And I really love what you said here. You said different positions and movements you can try to encourage good positioning for baby to reduce pain and promote progress in labor. The midwife for my first birth said nothing about the potential that my baby wasn't in an ideal position, and movement likely would have helped and potentially could have delayed or avoided an epidural. But instead, I got an epidural at 0 centimeters and hardly moved for almost 24 hours afterwards, which likely contributed to my C-section. And I like that. And I feel like that's something so simple, right? Like, why don't more people know this? Why don't more people say that? It's really funny because it reminded me of the birth I was at last night, which set me behind in my whole entire day today because I overslept. When I showed up, it was a midwife, a home birth midwife that I had done births with before. And I love, she's amazing. And my birth photography client was sitting on the toilet and she's like, I think this baby's posterior. So we're doing some sitting on the toilet to see if that can help adjust. And I don't know if you've heard this, Diana, but we've talked about it before on the podcast where the toilet is a great place to labor. It like settles your hips. It cradles. It's nice and open. It's a great spot for somebody to do counter pressure, or you can turn around backwards and lean over the back of the toilet with a pillow. All of those things are great options in laboring on the toilet. But that was the thing. Like, she got out of the tub. They changed positions. They did something different. And after the birth, this midwife told me that while this mom was waiting on the toilet, she could see baby moving around and like you could see the belly kind of moving and the baby trying to get into a better position because she thought the baby was posterior. And I said that already. But anyways, it worked great because I got there at 11:40. Baby was born at 12:15 in the morning. And after she got out of the toilet, she got back in the tub and then everything had clearly shifted. She started really making pushy sounds not long after that. And it was really neat to be able to see that, right? Like, our bodies are amazing. Now, granted, there is nuance and there's some times where our bodies need a little bit of help and our babies need a little bit of help. I want to allow the space and nuance for that. But most of the time when trusted and given space, our bodies can do amazing things. Now, when you have an epidural, it's totally fine if you want an epidural. That is a perfectly normal thing to want. And you can have a VBAC with an epidural, and movement is possible with an epidural. I think a lot of times our hospital providers will just give you epidural and leave you flat on your back. I know I certainly was when I had my epidural that ended in a C-section birth. But there are small little movements you can make. You don't have to make these big drastic movements like getting out of the tub and getting on the toilet, just even switching side to side or moving your leg up and moving your leg down, moving the other leg up and then moving it down and crisscrossing your legs and putting the bed up so you're sitting up, then laying it back down. Like, little adjustments can create that, just that little shift in your pelvis that can help encourage your baby to come down even with an epidural. So it doesn't have to be these big drastic things, although sometimes it can be, and sometimes that is very, very helpful. But don't feel like you have to be completely restricted in movement just if you have an epidural. So cool. All right, Diana, it was so great to have you here sharing your story with us today. I loved all the different versions. I don't think I will never not be frustrated when people talk about how much of a struggle it was to have a baby during COVID. Like, it makes me so sad. The extra pressure, the extra limitations, or the extra things that people had to deal with. But also, I feel like it was good in some ways too, because it pushed a lot of people out of the hospitals and to having home birth and to really checking out the safety of home birth and exploring it as an additional option. And I know that here in Utah, especially, our rates of home birth jumped quite a bit during at COVID and after. We're sustaining those higher rates. And so I think that that was a good thing too, to just really educate people about other options, or maybe not educate them as much as push them to seek out other options and realize how safe and supported you can be during a home birth, even for VBAC.
Yeah, I fully agree. I would not have come to home birth had the pandemic not happened. And that way I'm really, really grateful, you know, because it ended up giving me my dream birth. And yeah, I know there was a little uptick in home births. My cousin, actually, a couple months after I had my first home birth, I talked to her on the phone and she ended up doing that the same thing. She switched last minute to a home birth in Utah and had her second baby at home. So there's definitely an uptick in 2020.
Amazing. Well, I am so grateful to you for coming to share your story with us today. And I hope that you have a nice, cozy little winter. I guess when this episode airs, it's going to be the end of summer. But right now, we're recording, it's winter. It's very cold. I'm sitting here wrapped up in a very heavy blanket. And yeah, I hope you get to snuggle your sweet little girls.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.